greetings and welcome on board WDKOK Sunrise. Thank you so much for listening to our program. We're back with a guest that we met last year who's been giving us some great information about vaccines and COVID-19 and sort of the medical aspects of some of this and the latest trends. We have on the line Malu Tejada, and she has her MD and also a master's in public health and is at Penn State as a Penn State Extension educator in their Food, Families, and Health Division. Malu, thank you so much for calling in today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
I really do appreciate it. All right. As we record, it's the end of June, so I want to ask about the COVID-19 vaccine. Sort of what is the state of vaccination as far as you're concerned? You know, you still have some folks getting their first jab. Other folks are ready for their boosters. Kind of give us a glimpse of what's happened on the COVID vaccine now.
Well, first jabs, obviously, you know, the people getting the first jab are less and less because the vast majority of Americans right now have had already at least one dose. So over 78% of Americans as of June 2022 have received at least one dose. So obviously, the more people get vaccinated, the less people need their first jab. So it's a good thing, and the fact that it's sort of plateauing is expected. At the same time, it's not over. There's still people who have not received any dose. And COVID is still the third leading cause of death in the U.S. in 2021. And just depending, obviously, on where you are relative to the waves or the peaks of contagion, last February, for example, almost as many people in the U.S. were dying from COVID as from heart disease. And it's still the number one cause of death among people between 45 and 84 years old. And it's in the top four causes of death for children under 5 years old. So we still need people who are not yet vaccinated to take that first step in getting their first jab.
We're a couple years into the vaccinations, and now some folks may have had unanswered questions and didn't get the vaccine at all. What could you say to those folks to assure them that the vaccine's safe and tested and it might be worth getting the vaccine now?
Yeah, I know, and lots of people are still thinking, well, I already had COVID, or like there's a new variant, and I've heard that it works less on new variants. But the answer is very clear. It's still very worth it to get vaccinated. As different variants have been, we've been exposed to different variants. If you remember, the Delta was more severe, and then we had the Omicron last winter. And that one appears to lead to a less severe infection or milder disease, but it still spreads and is way more contagious than previous variants. The other thing is people still get infected with COVID several times, although it is true that, you know, when the viruses mutate, which is expected with RNA viruses, sometimes, obviously, the vaccine will work a bit less, but it still works well enough to prevent severe diseases, to prevent hospitalizations, and to prevent death. So that there's no doubt that it's still worth it. Just to give you, you know, like we get tired of this and people, you know, like the news is moving on. We're not talking so much about it. But I mean, just to put this into perspective, there's still currently over 25,000 people hospitalized in May and June because of COVID. There's a daily average of over 4,000 new admissions throughout the country. And there's still around 287 people dying every day from COVID. That was the last month's average. And like, if you remember the last big wave, I would say, in March, as recently as March, we still had over 1,000 Americans dying from COVID every day. And the vast majority of those deaths were among the unvaccinated.
If folks are considering a booster, they have been vaccinated, got their first set, and may have gotten the first booster that you get. That would be pretty common. And they're considering the second booster. What are the factors that go into that
So the second booster is really for people, or recommended for people over 50 years old, or people who have immunocompromised system. But I think there's still a lot of people who haven't had the first booster, particularly maybe among children, because now a first booster is even recommended for children above 5 years old, 5 years old and older. And I know that one of the reasons people don't get the first booster, or sometimes they get the first one, and even if they are eligible to get the second one, they're kind of hesitant, is because they get a bit, again, tired of thinking, oh, it's never over, I have to go again and again. But I think we really have to understand that the protection from COVID infection or from the vaccine decreases over time. We know this. And it actually decreases after an infection much faster than after the vaccine. So it's a very good idea to first get vaccinated and then keep up to date with those boosters. The other thing is, like, you know, long COVID. We don't know very much about that. And what those boosters do is basically make sure that you're well protected over time. And it's nothing new. Like, there's so many childhood and adult vaccines that have boosters that are required. For example, tetanus, diphtheria. We need boosters into adulthood to maintain the protective efficacy. The MMR, you need 2 doses in childhood. You need one in adulthood. And the flu vaccine, which is a typical RNA vaccine, you need it yearly. It's getting the first vaccination without being up to date, it's better than nothing, but it just doesn't give you the full protection that you could benefit from. And one of the things I wanted to mention is that I found that there's a very good tool on the CDC website where people can find out if and when they should get a booster.
Is the flu vaccine still a good idea to get that? We still have conventional flu season coming up in a couple of months. Mm-hmm. You still recommend a flu vaccine as well?
Absolutely. So the flu and the COVID, even if they share some similar symptoms, they're actually two completely different viruses. So the flu vaccine will not protect you from COVID, and the COVID vaccine will not protect you from the flu. Hopefully, at some point, we might have a vaccine that combines both. But yeah, you need to protect yourself from a flu vaccine as well as the COVID. And also, you know, like, if you're protected against the COVID but not against the flu, you might still get very ill in the winter when those are more common. So it just makes sense. If you want to avoid getting sick anytime, you have to target both. And one thing that is important, because I think it's a concern for a lot of people, is like, oh, can I get them together? Or I have some immunizations that I need to get updated, like routine immunizations. Can they be administered at the same time? And except for a few specific exceptions, most of the time, vaccines can be administered together. And certainly the flu and COVID, absolutely, there's no problem there. The same applies to children as well.
We're talking to Malu Tejada. She is a Penn State Extension educator in the Food, Families, and Health Division. She has an MD and her master's in public health, and we're talking to her about vaccines and COVID-19. Do you think sometimes folks are getting enough of this conversation, enough about the pandemic talk and health warnings and talks about vaccines? Do you get to the point where folks just stop listening?
Yes, absolutely. And it's normal, and it's expected. It's tiring to always be talking about the same. We're all tired of the preventive measures, you know, even when we know the local conditions might be such that we need to wear masks or things like that, or it might be safer to maintain some distance. It does get tiring, even for professionals, you know. We're just humans. But again, we have to remember that it's still there. It's very hard to predict who will get a very severe case. And it's even harder to predict who will get a long COVID, and we don't know so many things still about long COVID. But yes, it's it's difficult. It's difficult, I think, for everyone, for the ones who want to protect the population, for the individual, even when you have the best of intentions. It just gets harder and harder to follow. But, yeah, we need to constantly remember that it's still there. It's still putting people in the hospital. It's still killing people.
The last time we spoke, we talked about the conceptual idea of a Lyme disease vaccine emerging. Very briefly, any progress on that front?
So, yes, I think last time I had mentioned one of the Valneva-Pfizer vaccine candidates called VLA-15. So it's been in phase two of human trials, and apparently from what I read in one of the recent updates, it's going into the phase three anytime, because they were talking about the third quarter of this year. It appears that it will need to be administered as a three-dose schedule. And so that's the one. So it's going forward, and so far the results are very encouraging. And then I think I also mentioned something from the University of Massachusetts Medical School, Mass Biologics. They developed a human monoclonal antibody that's designed to be used as a pre-exposure prophylaxis for Lyme disease. And so this would be a bit different than a vaccine, because it would just deliver a single anti-Lyme antibody directly to the person. And this one would be sort of a single shot that people would get each year, usually at the beginning of the tick season. So we're thinking sort of March, April. And that would provide, so it's expected that it would at least provide protection during the main season, which is 9 months. And they've received approval for the first human clinical trial. So that's undergoing. We'll see how it goes. So far, they seem to think that they are able to cover for 9 months, but that needs to be confirmed during the during the next phases.
Anything important for you to add to our conversation? Maybe I didn't ask.
It's still very much worth it to get vaccinated if you haven't done so. And if you have done so, it's very important to get the boosters, be up to date. I think some people had questions also and some fears about the monkeypox. So the monkeypox, if you've heard, so it's now we have the latest I checked, which was on June 29th. There were 4 confirmed cases in Pennsylvania out of 305 confirmed cases in the U.S. It's not a new virus, because it's endemic in countries in Africa, but it's usually not transmitted. There's usually not outbreaks outside of those endemic countries. And right now, there are several outbreaks throughout the globe. There's more than 1,000 cases in the UK. I've seen there's like cases in Mexico. There's one case in Peru. There's many, many countries. And it's not quite clear yet how that came to happen. One thing to remember is it's not related to the chickenpox, but it's actually the same family as the smallpox. But the symptoms can be very similar to chickenpox. So it's like fever, headache, muscle ache, swollen lymph nodes, and that rash that, you know, can be mistaken for chickenpox, although it's absolutely not the same disease, I mean. And it can also be sometimes difficult to differentiate from other infectious disease that have a rash, like such as syphilis or herpes. So if you have those sort of like flu-like symptoms with a rash, it's important that you go see your doctor. And again, if you have flu-like symptoms without a rash, always consider that it might be the flu or the COVID. But if you have the rash, it's important to show it to a health professional. Right now, there's no treatment specifically for the monkeypox, but because they're very similar to the smallpox, we have antiviral drugs and vaccines that can be used to prevent and treat monkeypox.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for all the information and the help and, boy, sound advice across the board and initial information we need about monkeypox. Very much appreciated. Thanks for all your help. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
Thank you. You too.
We're talking to Malu Tejada. She has her MD and a master's in public health and is a Penn State Extension educator in the Food, Families, and Health Division. You can find her in Bellefonte, PA, occasionally, and she is working for Penn State Extension.